Welcome back to Crossover Daily, SI's daily NBA podcast. I'm your host, Rohan Nadkarni. Today on the show, we'll be discussing the Lakers' Game 4 win over the Nuggets. How sustainable is Los Angeles' current version of success? Is this team the junkiest one LeBron has ever been on? Also, are the Nuggets the spiritual successor to the Warriors? Joining you to break all of this down is the Light Years podcast, Sam Esfandiari. Let's start the show. All right, joining us now on Crossover Daily is the host of the Light Years podcast on Blue Wire Podcast. You can also hear him on Warriors World Radio. You've probably seen his tweets. If you follow the NBA, I feel like he's one of the most compelling people to follow on there. Please welcome to the show, Sam Esfandiari. Sam, how's it going, my man?
Not too bad, despite the fact we got some like vintage Dick Bavetta style officiating down the camp.
Of course, we're talking about Nuggets-Lakers game four. The Lakers taking a 3-1 lead in the series. We record these right after the games, and there's already been some discussion about the refereeing. I don't think that's where we should focus. The calls are always going to kind of go back and forth, I think, during a playoff series. You know, Sam and I, we're catching up right before we started recording this. As much as I try to poke holes in the Lakers, tonight in the fourth, I thought we really saw what made them such an effective team, and it really was their defense and rebounding down the stretch.
It was more of a grind game the whole way through. Like, for stretches there, I was pretty convinced Jamal Murray was the best player in the NBA because he just couldn't miss anything. But beyond that, like, I think the best way to describe the Lakers would be some version of resilience, because they were just – they weren't getting good offense. No one was really hitting outside shots for them other than KCP. LeBron looked gassed half the game. He wasn't really getting a lot of space on his jumpers and anything, but they were getting every rebound, particularly down the stretch, and playing just enough defense.
Tell me if you agree with this. I think this is maybe the junkiest team LeBron has ever played for. And I don't mean that as an insult. Like I said, they are effective. They win games. As much as I come on here after seemingly every single one of their wins and say, you know, this looked like a weakness, this looked like a vulnerability, they pull out these games. And I think that, you know, you call it resilience. They have a weird, I don't even know if it's adaptability, but we have to win this way tonight. You know, in the fourth quarter, I really thought the Nuggets looked like they were about to go on a run. Then LeBron guards Jamal Murray. They junk up just enough Denver offensive possessions before the Nuggets can really figure out what they want to do with that. Their offensive rebounding, I think, really taking advantage of the fact that Denver's scrambling a lot on defense. The Lakers, Rondo, Anthony Davis, all coming up with key offensive rebounds. It's almost disconcerting to watch, because I don't think LeBron's ever played for a team like this one.
I mean, I think you probably have to go back to the first Cleveland stint to find a team that's like defined by defense and unimaginative offense, like for a LeBron team. But that's kind of what they are. Like, mm-hmm. Stylistically, they're different because defense is different in 2020 than it was in 2009. But like, it is kind of a team that's defined by the fact that they're versatile on defense and not really versatile on offense. Like, a lot of those, particularly the second half, it was a lot of LeBron isolation with three Denver defenders on him because they don't respect any of the shooters. And just kind of like, well, the Lakers are going to crash the boards. And that's like their only form of offense. They weren't really, there was nothing imaginative. There was nothing like cool on that end. And then like, I mean, but on the flip side of it is like, what are you really going to do with Caruso, Danny Green, Kuzma? It's not like they have these options to do more creative stuff on offense than what they're doing.
It's tough. I mean, it's in a way, it's bleak sometimes the way their offense looks. I mean, they were closing with Markieff Morris and Rajon Rondo for much of the fourth quarter. Like you said, what really can you do with those guys? And Rondo, to his credit, at least has been effective, which is really, as much as players have broken out in the playoffs, that's almost the most surprising thing to me about this postseason is just how much more effective he's been than the last few years of his career. It is interesting because in the half court, the Lakers can get so little going. You pack the paint against them. Anthony Davis takes a lot of tough shots. Sometimes he starts hot like he did tonight. Other times, you know, he's just taking a lot of contested mid-range shots. LeBron's jumper just looks so flat tonight. It's, you know, it's crazy because we come on here, and like I said, I've been doing this for a while now, but it, you worry about their half-court offense and how sustainable their success is, and that's kind of what I want to get to here. When you see them play and you see them in the series like this, on one hand, it seems so obvious where they struggle. On the other hand, they have taken a 3-1 lead against a Denver team that I think is playing to its ceiling right now. I don't think Denver can play that much better than it's played.
Oh, you don't think Jamal Murray can shoot better than like 65%?
Right. Just flipping it up with either hand and it's just a magnet.
I mean, we had people posting highlights of him and Michael Jordan right. side by side, which generally... I mean, I was a big Jamal Murray fan before the bubble started, but I wasn't comparing it to Michael Jordan. So
how sustainable do you see the Lakers' current version of success? Because right now, all it means is getting past either the Celtics or the Heat. They look likely to pass against the Nuggets. We've been idiots for saying that throughout these playoffs so far. They do think the Lakers are a little different than the Clippers and the Jazz. How sustainable do you see the Lakers' success? I mean, they've certainly made it this far and were really good during the regular season. Do you see them kind of hitting a wall at some point? Or is this, does this
so,
look
so
like
we're moving to the finals here? So, I mean, it looks like, it does look like we're going to get the Spo revenge series. If you want to call it that, I don't know. I think it's going to be an ugly matchup. Like, I will enjoy it because they'll play with really high intensity because it's the NBA finals and like, it'll only be ugly because the defense is better than the offense. But just looking at Miami and the Lakers, I see two teams who are just significantly better on defense than they are on offense at this point. Like Miami are very dependent on a rookie to be like a shot creator and outside shooter. And then like, you know, Duncan Robinson is as a spacing guy who, I mean, undrafted from D3, right? Like, I mean, the point is that, it's not Steph Curry and Klay Thompson we're talking about. And then on the Lakers side, I mean, we touched on it earlier. It's like LeBron and AD are amazing. But beyond those two, it's a bunch of guys who you wouldn't really define as shot creators or shooters or just – I mean, their calling card is kind of intelligent, versatile defense, I guess is the best way to put it. And that's kind of how I would define both teams. So I think it's going to end up being kind of a real grind of a matchup. It'll have its moments. But like, if we thought the last two games, like the Laker-Denver game tonight and the Miami-Boston game the night before were kind of grinds, I think that's what we're in for the rest of the way.
Well, I do want to talk about the Nuggets as much as I've been shoveling dirt on them for the majority of this podcast so far and getting ahead and talking about a potential finals matchup. Sam, a big reason why I wanted to have you on during this series, because I think you're probably the person most qualified to answer this question, and I've seen people touch on this a little bit so far. Do you see the Nuggets as a spiritual successor to the Warriors? I mean, granted, the Warriors' run, I think, is far from over, and that's something I think we'll be talking about a lot this offseason. But the way they play basketball, the way their team has been built, I don't think it's going to be a paradigm shift in the NBA. Obviously, the teams like the Clippers and the Lakers of the world are still going to be chasing superstars, but it's refreshing.
Throw the Warriors into that. They've gone away from being organic to just being thirsty for everyone.
Right, that's true. They've entered free agency Photoshop Twitter, just like the rest of us. How do you feel about just the way this Nuggets team is built? Do you see them at all kind of affecting maybe the way some teams can look at the way they're trying to build title contenders over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so like there's a few similarities beyond just the basketball stylistic one. Mm-hmm. One, is anyone on Denver a top five pick? Like Jokic, obviously famously, what was he, 40th? Someone right, in the second yeah. round, right? But Jamal Murray was the 7th pick overall. Is mm-hmm. that correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, him and Gary Harris were both mid-lottery.
Is like, I mean, Steph was the 7th pick. Klay was the 11th pick. Those are good picks, but they're not, you know, if you look through contenders, typically they're defined by players picked 1 or 2 in the draft. You know, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. You can keep going down the list. It's just kind of usually you do not find a superstar at 7 or 11 or stuff like that. So there's hitting on picks that are not necessarily like high premium picks, right? Like the usual return for like 7 to 10 is usually like a player like, and I don't know why he's popping to my mind, but like Luol Deng. You know, a very solid
Luol Deng, right?
Shout who made like Deng. A couple all-star games.
Yeah.
You'd love to have him on your team, but you're not like, you know, you're not talking about how like Luol's going to lead the parade down.
right.
So something like that. Right. So that's the first thing. The second thing that, yeah, I mean, at this point, I don't think Steph was as hard to build around as Jokic, but until the Warriors won, there was massive skepticism on how you can build around a guard whose calling card is shooting it from beyond 25 feet. And then the Warriors just kind of found the perfect confluence of wings and versatility around him to take advantage of what was clearly a game-changing skill. I kind of view Jokic in the same way where, like, most people – like, no matter how amazing he plays, and he's been amazing in all his playoffs, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, last year he played, like, 80 minutes in one game or something ridiculous like that. Like,
the Femi's triple overtime game, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like you wouldn't expect him to kind of, you know, everyone always focuses on the fact that he's slow and he's going to get exposed in pick and rolls. Instead of looking at the fact that he's like one of the three or four most creative players in the NBA, it doesn't matter what you do to him on offense because he will inevitably counter it. It may take him a game. Like game one, the Lakers' length kind of overwhelmed him. He was in foul trouble. And then he kind of settled into it. And it's like, I mean, they lost game two. But like, he had an ISO matchup with AD who I can't think of a better defender on, and it doesn't bother
truly
him.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, so it's like he's one of those players where it's easier, like your mind always focuses on what he can't do instead of what he can do. I would have actually described Dirk the same way.
Yeah.
And so from that similarity, I think there is a similarity at the Warriors because it's like you have this guy who clearly is a unique creative force. Albeit, I don't know that Steph and Jokic could be more opposite in terms of just like their skill set and everything they do. But like, it is that thing where you're kind of like, you're waiting to see if Denver can figure out those perfect ancillary pieces around what I think is a really good core. Like, Jeremy Grant seems like one player who fits the mold for what you'd want to fit. Paul Millsap in theory, but he's 35 now. Like maybe they need to find like the 28-year-old Millsap.
Yeah, Millsap I think is a backup center at this point in his career, and I'm glad.
That I get the idea of what they were going for there, but
I mean he made a perfect sense when they signed him. You know, it is. I think you bring up a great point. It is going to come down to how they build around him. And watching the series, I think what they really need. They basically need a second version of Jeremy Grant, which is obviously a lot easier said than done, because I think what they're really lacking is someone with – this is going to sound weird. They need someone who's thick. Like, they need someone with three Cs who can kind of go up against the LeBrons of the world or even the Kawhis of the world.
Basically, a younger version of Millsap.
Yes, exactly.
Or Draymond Green was for the Warriors.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, there is an alternate
reality. Guard multiple positions. Right. Go ahead.
There is an alternate reality for the Warriors where Draymond never exists, and they're just a very good team that gets to the second or third round and kind of has a Steve Nash, Phoenix Suns reality where you're like, I really like these guys, but they don't have enough defense around them. They don't have enough X, Y, or Z around them. So, I mean, I don't want to say the Warriors got lucky with Draymond, but like he really was kind of that perfect piece to tie together what they clearly had, which was a special backcourt there. And in Denver's case, like Jokic is a special player, very creative, and just kind of, I just don't even know who you compare him to, really, right?
Like, it's true. Yeah. I saw Zach Lowe throwing out Dirk, and I obviously get that comparison just in terms of the big who can kind of control an offense, but he really is he's an evolution. He's going to be the guy people are compared to 10, 15 years from now when people start copying his game. You know what I mean? I really think he is the first of his kind. I want to hop back to the Lakers just for a second. Obviously, they did win the game, and I think that most of us would agree they are the favorites to win the title at this point. And I do want to get into some, you know, talk just in case, you know, they do finish this series out over the weekend, and maybe we don't get a chance to address this on this podcast. I don't want to drag you into a let's talk about LeBron's legacy conversation, but what do you make of the? I mean, it's just funny to me because I don't want to dump on Kawhi. I think the Clippers got dumped on enough, but Kawhi was kind of getting heralded as this person who has a chance to win three finals with three different teams as kind of the best guy, and I think that Kawhi has some more holes in his playoff resume than people realize.
I mean, his first finals MVP, he was a role player.
Yeah, and Tim Duncan, I think, was the better player on that team. Don't get me started on last year's finals. You know all too well. I think the Warriors win that series if Clay's healthy. I have told several people that. I told Boogie Cousins that. But what do you make of the fact that this seems to be the least like drama or stakes ever attached to a LeBron playoff run? And do you sense that? Because it almost feels like, I don't know. All the other ones had a little more excitement going with them.
The bubble in general is just weird. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to take it. Like, on the one hand, it's just not the regular playoffs.
For sure.
On the other hand, it's harder in a lot of ways. Like, we talked about this probably before we started recording. I can't quite remember. But we were discussing the fact that, like, playing every other day probably hurts LeBron more than it hurts Jamal Murray, because LeBron is 35 he's going to turn 36 this year, and Jamal Murray is like 23, and Jamal Murray could probably play 48 minutes tomorrow, right?
Yeah,
LeBron's probably going to go get like 24 hours of round the clock treatment.
Right. He's going to have those big, huge padding things around his knees and all kinds of stuff.
Ice everywhere, heat pads. I don't know, whatever it may take. But like, and that's just the reality of aging. And he's really hurt by the fact that, like, I mean, in the normal playoffs, he'd get, you know, when they travel, you get an extra day. So that's a 2-day layoff, that sort of stuff. So from that standpoint, you know, it is a little harder for him, but I just think people are having a hard time dealing with the fact that also the NBA is going on in September, and we're going to crown an NBA champion sometime around Halloween. And, you know, like for all we know, like LeBron will be showing up to game six of the finals in like a Phantom of the Opera costume because of Halloween. Like that's like the type of like weirdness we're talking about here. Like, I mean, I don't need to explain to everyone, you know, COVID and kind of it's just different. And I think some of that, like, let me put it this way. If the Lakers win it all and LeBron gets to say, I want a title with three separate teams, the year-long media tour with all his, what's the best way to put it? You know, his media friends, or whatever you want to call it, will be great. And, you know, it'll be talked up. Like, in some ways, I feel like even the 2016 finals, like, in the moment, it was like, wow, that was impressive. And then, like, the next year, as everyone reflected on it, it got bigger and bigger. And, like, and it makes sense for a player who's as accomplished as him, an undisputed top, like, five of all time, probably top 2 to 3 of all time. Like, I mean, when you're talking about anyone of that caliber, it's literally just subjective when you get up to that level, right? But it's like, no one's gonna, you know, dispute the fact he's the best player of this era and one of the greatest of all time. So it'll just build on itself.
It also, that 2016 Kaido got a little extra talked up, I think, because they knew what was awaiting them.
KD signing with the Warriors in many ways, like, helped build the legacy of the 16 finals, but, like, you know what? It is what it is.
So you bring up KD, we bring up the 16 finals. I'd be remiss if I didn't get at least one Warriors question in with you. So I just want to end on this because there's been now some talk lately about when next season should start. It's looking like sometime, I think, January or February. I still think that might be optimistic if they want fans in the stands. At the same time, I watched a football game tonight where there were fans in the stands. I wonder if the NBA almost regrets coming back so soon and seeing all these other sports just being like, ah, whatever, well, I guess we'll put fans in there.
Can I throw one take out there? I think Please. It's weirder when there's only 1/6 of a stadium full. Like, it's Yes. better with no fans.
Agreed.
Than like subjecting the nation to
Agreed.
Oakland A's baseball, which is my favorite baseball team. But it's like, I mean, objectively, A's games are about 1/6.
I'm a Marlins fan, so I know how you feel.
There we go. Yeah. At least you can blame it on the humidity.
Yeah, that's true, man. Those games were humid. Yeah, the fan stuff is weird. But I want to ask, when you survey the current landscape of the West, I mean, we kind of saw it play out this year, right? It does look like there is a definitive top 2.5-ish. I still think the Clippers are going to be in the mix next year. The Nuggets, obviously, and the Lakers. Where do the Warriors fit into that group with you from how you've kind of observed this postseason play out?
So I think they can win the West, but it depends what they do in the margins. Like, I'm watching all these teams play, and my gut take is a healthy Steph, Klay, and Draymond as a core is good enough to be the core of a team who could win a title, right? Like, mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything that makes me think that isn't true still, assuming health and, you know, all the other circumstances. Right. But I'm going to ask you right now, name the rest of the Warriors roster. I'm obviously entrenched in it. I can name every player there. I guarantee you can't.
Well, I know that you've tweeted about Smaljic several times.
Smile Heech.
There we go. We got Eric Paschal. I liked him, by the way.
He's a solid little player.
I kind of hope he has a role. We have Wiggins. I think that's about reaching my knowledge
and
here.
And that's kind of my point.
In my defense, it's been about 7 months since I've watched a Warriors game.
Honestly, I applaud you for watching him 7 months ago, because no one should have watched him after Steph broke his hand. But what I was getting at is...
Glenn Robinson's still there?
They traded him to Philly.
Okay,
they might get him back.
That's right. They did trade him to Philly.
So all I'm getting at here is it's a very unfinished roster. And if they put the right combination of size and athleticism around that core, because as I look at them, I'm like, well, there's no real center. I mean, I love me some Kayvon Looney, but he has not proven physically durable at this
Millsap,
point.
Millsap as their center. I've seen people float that out and I'm into it.
I mean, he does fit the way they like to play. I think people who float that out there think it's 2017. And that's the Millsap.
He'd have to be a backup. He'd have to be a backup.
He could help. Yeah. But my overarching point is I want to see what they do in the margins, because they can win with the core they have, but right now you can't name a player past like the sixth player on the roster right now. And you know what? I don't know that they have more than six guys with guaranteed contracts, so.
Well, what they end up doing with Wiggins and that second pick is going to be really interesting. Sam, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, man. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.